Junkyard asshole. Of course he has guns. Everyone all over this state has guns to protect us from roving bands of raiders. Boss makes a point to keep them out of the wrong hands. And anyway, by the time I stepped back through the airlock, there she was, sitting with her bloody paw to her chest waiting on me. Along with four of the meanest cats you ever saw, from her first litter here. She had chewed off part of her own foot and come to me for help. I stroked Notch's head. He'd nearly died today. All the cats had worked together to save the junkyard and help me. It was time for a sacrifice to the cats, so to speak. Leaving the med bay open, in the kitchenette I unsealed a pouch of goat's milk and poured it into a wide, shallow bowl. In another bowl, I dumped a pouch of very expensive chicken chunks and stirred in a helping of crunchy kibble. I ungloved, scanned through the front airlocks, and when I was sure no puffers were in the vicinity, I opened the locks and placed the bowls outside fast. The airlocks closed. Lifting Notch, I carried him to the small space between the two back airlock doors. I got him settled in with an old army blanket and two bowls, one with water and one with canned broth. A shallow tray with desert dirt, suitable for a litter box, went on the other side of the floor. I added a folding household ladder that should be easy to climb and would let him see out as soon as he felt like making the few steps up. I sealed the lock, leaving the sleeping cat safely between the two back airlock doors. "You were telling me about Tufts," Jaeger said. He was back at the med bay, a fresh beer in his hand. He hadn't asked, but since he was effectively a prisoner, I didn't begrudge him the stout. I told her she could come in, but her kits had to wait outside. I explained that I'd put her in a box and she would go to sleep and she'd wake up better. Not healed, but better. "You talked to the cats." Deadpan, not laughing. I shrugged and ran a hand wand over my hands, cleaning them. She came in, let me lift her into the med bay and lay down. When the surgery was over and she woke up, she limped to the kitchen, demanded goat milk, drank it, and went to the owner's bed. I had almost said my bed. Jaeger seemed to find my inept lies amusing and breathed out a laugh. The boss slept on the dinette bed for 3 days until Her Majesty decided she was well enough to leave. "And where did you sleep?" My lips lifted in a small smile. I turned from the sink to see Jaeger cleaning the med bay. I was so surprised I stopped dead. He knew his way around, cleaning with disinfectant and refilling the surgical supplies from the marked cabinet to the side. He hit the right sequence for decontamination on the instruction sheet. An ultraviolet light lit the room. It was scut work, not the sort of thing a national enforcer did. "I live in Naoma," I said, naming a nearby town. Jaeger made a non-committal sound. As he worked, the sun set, and the office darkened. The modified low-water use air scrubber plants closed their leaves and stopped removing pollutants from the air. The lights overhead should have blinked on, bright and gleaming. Instead, they came on slowly with a dull glow, a brownout that indicated the office AI, nicknamed Gomez, had shunted power to the med bay and the AG grabber. I'd overused my energy supply, and now I was paying for it. Between the grabber's power usage and healing Notch, my energy reserves were nearly tapped out. I could draw on the spaceship's nearly inexhaustible supply, but no. Not with Jaeger here. I had already used the shields, but they were less obvious to humans. I was sure he hadn't noticed, beyond a weird, crawly feeling under his skin. But if I used the weakly interacting massive particle power from the Sunstar's engines or the office's weapons array, he'd figure it all out. I didn't think even my talents could make Jaeger forget a WIMP engine. And if I couldn't alter his memories, Mateo would kill him to protect us. And I didn't want Jaeger dead. Bloody damn. I didn't want him dead. On the screens, I saw Pride Cats targeting a line of puffers on aisle Tango 3. I counted 14 cats and 6 puffers, most of them weaponized. Even with those numbers, that was not good odds for the cats. "I have jerky and dried fruit at the back," Jaeger said, tucking his fingers into his pockets, looking all relaxed and loose and easy, as if he couldn't kill me with those hands in less than 2 seconds if he wanted. "But since the bike is outside, and I'm not, may I impose on the hospitality of little girl to let me use her facilities and to feed me?" That was about as formal as an OMW ever got. When he didn't change his stance or his expression, I jutted my chin at my PTC, my personal toilet compartment. I'm not that little, but help yourself. As to food, I tilted my head, thinking about my supplies. Boss has pouches of tuna, canned shrimp, and goat's milk. A couple of tablespoons of butter, a few dried herbs, onion powder, a little wheat flour, and roasted garlic. As an afterthought, I added, canned corn, salt, pepper. Jaeger grinned ear to ear. The transformation was startling and intriguing and holy cow. "Little girl, that sounds like the makings of a seafood stew right here in the middle of the West Virginia desert." I had no idea why I offered my hard-to-replace and terribly expensive foodstuffs to the national enforcer. A small voice, not the burger chip implant, but a recognizable small voice, whispered into the back of my mind, "Because you're lonely." That stopped me cold. The voice was right. Mateo and I had been alone for years. I was no longer human. And Mateo was a warbot, as much a machine as a man. Except for limited and brief times, he wasn't someone I could see or touch or physically interact with. Jaeger was human. Jaeger was here, right now. Chances were very good that he'd be dead or different, altered, in 72 hours tops. First time in forever I had company. If I'd admit to being Shining Smith, he'd be company who knew the real me and what I had done, or at least some of my history. He'd be company who could talk to me about the outlaw militia warriors in the outside world. Real conversation. Maybe a game of cards. An old movie. But if he'd sent Harlan, if he was the traitor, he might also just shoot me and be done with it. The loneliness ached. "Take it," the small voice said. I opened my mouth, still trying to decide. "I don't know who your Shining Smith is. My boss's name is Smith, but the only thing shiny on him is his bald head." "Your boss. Really?" I ignored him and turned away, leaving him hulking behind me. He didn't strangle me or cut my throat, heading for the PTC instead. Score 1 for Jaeger. Though it was hard to see in the dim light with the orangey glasses, I opened the food supply cabinet and removed the ingredients, putting it all on the counter. Jaeger returned from the PTC too fast to have used the body wand. Not that he had clean clothes to change into. I thought about that while he raided my cabinets to find a 2-gallon stew pot, which he placed on the hob, and turned on the propane stove. He began to assemble the stew, starting with the dried onion, butter, and canned seafood. All that in the office, in my house, making himself at home, doing things I'd done alone for years. I didn't know what to do with myself. I decided to clean up. After the fight, I stank. I left the room. I stood in the tiny toilet, adjusting the screen to show the views from the office cameras, watching Jaeger in case he decided to snoop. He didn't. but he moved well, economical and sure. As I watched, I used the body wand. Dead skin cells, dried sweat, body hair, and desert filth landed in the bottom of the stall. I blew my body clean with a small blower and palmed a little dry shampoo into my hair, rubbing it into my scalp before vacuuming it. I missed water. I missed it a lot. And I needed to make a decision about Jaeger fast. After the wanding, I cleaned up my mess, moisturized, put on my orangey lip gloss and kajal, and dressed in clean clothes, things I could sleep in comfortably if it came to sharing quarters with him. With Jaeger, who was clearly a dangerous mountain of a man. I stared at myself in the mirror, my glasses off, my odd orange eyes staring back at me. In the low light of the brownout, it wasn't likely that Jaeger could see my eyes anyway, so I didn't have to wear the lenses. Hopefully. I debated putting on little mama's perfume. Makeup. This was not a date. It wasn't. But some small part of me might want it to be. And the deadly part of me demanded it to be. I squashed that part down. Back in the main room, I defaulted all the inside screens, including the one in the PTC, to show outside events. I pulled out some of Pop's clothes, things he'd worn before the war, before the stress and constant battle and seeing people he loved die had stripped all the meat off him, leaving him a shell of his former self, before the Parkinson stole his brain and personality and memories. And before I changed. I rested my hand on the heavy fabric. The pants' legs would be too short, but they were soft and clean, better than the sweat-stained things Jaeger was wearing now. Jaeger had made a roux with the butter and flour and herbs, added in the goat milk, dry milk, a bottle of water, and the seafood from their packets. It wasn't fresh seafood from the ocean, which I hadn't had since I escaped Washington State and headed east. But it smelled delicious. I placed the clean clothes in the PTC. Jaeger set the propane burner to simmer and went to the toilet, shut the door. I hadn't said a word. Into my earbud, Mateo said, "Got yourself a servant? That's a little fast even for you." Softly, I replied, "I didn't do that on purpose." "Did he touch you?" "No." I thought through the events of the afternoon. But the office hasn't ever been decontaminated, and I didn't wash my hands at lunch, or after I set up the med bay. I never thought about it. I don't clean my stove or the cabinets. "You're still passing them through your sweat," Mateo said. "Interesting. And awful. We had hoped I'd eventually stop secreting the funky nanobots through my pores." My aunt's stung wrist itched, wanting to be used, as if the nanos knew what was happening and wanted to speed things up. Night fell. On low-light cameras, I watched the pride cats tear into another puffer. I couldn't ID the specific cats, but they were fierce. I watched as Mateo strode in, lifting his long legs over the skids of engine and body parts, and swept up the pieces. "Gomez," I said, talking to the office AI. "Put on some of Pop's music in the background." Pops had loved music of all kinds, heavy metal bands, 1940s big band, jazz, R&B, crooners, country, even the skirling early war material Celtic stuff. He listened to everything, eclectic taste. Gomez started with a tearjerker called Half As Much by Rosemary Clooney. "Makes it easier," Mateo said, picking up where he left off. "We won't have to burn the body. I'll come up with the cover. Meantime, don't admit to being Shining. If he lives, it would make it harder to mind wipe him. From now on, your name is Heather Ann Gilson." "I don't look like a Heather Ann," I grouched. "Tough." The printer began spitting out documents. "Heather Ann Gilson was the name of the girl whose mother was being beaten up by Darson. the one saved by an enforcer, the one who supposedly died in the Battle of Seattle. His brain didn't work on every level all the time, but Mateo was thorough about security, sometimes scary thorough. I paged through the thin brown hemp docs on the printer. Heather now had a full ID, background, and history, all documented. I stuffed the docs into my personal storage area and pulled out my Kuta. I hadn't looked at it in ages, and it was way too small to fit now. I'd been spider monkey small at 12, and had put on a quarter meter and a few kilos since then. I pulled off the old sensors, found the one that was activated when the crawler crossed over the property boundary and ripped it off. I put them all into a box. I added some older sensors and a few ancient digital camera parts, some early and new comms, Earth-to-space hardware. The box now looked as if I stored small electronic scrap in it. I placed the box on the cabinet, knowing that the decision on how to proceed had been made for me the moment Jaeger started to serve me. It was a damn shame. He was interesting. But he'd live, or he'd die. Either way, I couldn't keep him around, and I had to make sure he remembered what I wanted him to. I set the table for two, which was really weird. I had never done that before. I checked the power levels on the office weapons that Jaeger didn't know about yet, stirred the soup, realized I was nervous. There were little pinpricks all over me, and my wrist was all but buzzing. My system was flooding with battle pheromones and mating chemicals, and my breath rate and heart rate were increasing. I fought to push my reaction down, to control my anxiety and my need, to decrease the secretions of chemicals and nanos through my pores. I was never around people for long. I made sure that I never had to deal with this part of me. I didn't have the control I might have if I went into town more often. "So, I'm Matt," Mateo said, making sure I had chosen. "Yeah, Matt," I said flatly. I didn't mean to transition Jaeger. You never do. A transition is better for him than being dead, if I can alter his memories enough to keep us safe, I amended. "If he lives through the process, maybe," Mateo said, his metallic voice managing to convey both doubt and mockery. I rubbed my wrist and said softly, "That was mean." But Mateo was right. Surviving the transition was no sure thing. Yet I had lived through it twice. The first time when I was 12, near the end of the first year of the war, I was swarmed by deadly genetically engineered male ants. They bit off parts of me and stung me full of poison. Then the queen got me, depositing her DNA-based bio-nanobots. The bio-nanos entered my bloodstream and attacked me on the genetic level, just as they had been designed to do to the ants. When I somehow survived the initial transition, the bio-nanos continued to modify me. In the second incident, I got exposed to a different kind of nano when a bigger, newer model, Chinese mama bot, crawled out of the bay and attacked what was left of Seattle. I'd been the only OMW small enough to get inside the mama bot in an attempt to disable it. Once inside, I'd been attacked by puffers, and their mechanical nanos, mech nanos, got into a cut. The bio-nanos already in my system adapted and modified them too. I'd survived the two transitions, but they had left me what I was now. Not superhuman, but no longer just human, with abilities that humans didn't have. Eventually, the half-bio, half-mech nanos began to secrete through my skin, driven to seek out and modify others. All but one of the people I'd accidentally or purposely touched after that had died in their own transition process, including my father, who I had tried to save from the disease that had been sucking the life out of him, and now I'd gotten sloppy and let a human into my space. Jaeger was already showing signs of the transition, bending to my will, becoming what I called a thrall. And he didn't even have the fever yet. Sloppy. I'd gotten bloody sloppy. I got out playing cards and checked the chrono because it felt as if my visitor had been in there a long time. But 10 minutes wasn't long unless I was nervous. Then it felt like forever. The music switched to Frank Sinatra singing Fly Me to the Moon. The music was changing again when I heard the PTC hatch open. I didn't turn around. I stirred the soup, my toes tapping to Aretha Franklin, belting out Rolling in the Deep. When I did look over, Jaeger was sitting at the dinette, dressed in Pop's clothes, his eyes on me, a fresh beer in one hand. Gomez, music volume down. Matt, I said over the office speakers, pushing with my blood slightly, accepting Jaeger's transition, preparing for enough mind-altering to allow him to leave us alive. Update, please. 24 puffers accounted for. Jaeger's bike is fine, to this point, Heather. What are you and Jaeger having for supper? Small talk. Baby steps, using our fake names to overwrite Jaeger's short-term memories with new ones. We chatted about the cats. We mentioned the imaginary boss a few times and his imaginary trip to Charleston, West Virginia, on business. Jaeger didn't take part. I brought the stew pot to the table and ladled chowder into the bowls. Jaeger didn't ask about the name changes, didn't seem to notice. He'd touched everything I had touched in the toilet. The beers, the ladle, everything. We'd had a guest once before, the first year I was here. Grant Zuckerman, a nice man who showed an interest in me and who I liked. A lot. He and I got close, very close. It seemed like an okay thing since Grant lived in the nearest town, Nauma, and had internet access and wanted to do business with the scrapyard. Mateo and I had done great with the mind-altering, giving Grant his freedom, keeping him coming back. Or so we thought. Unfortunately, Grant wanted more. It had gotten ugly. Mateo had been forced to end him. The bones were out back, buried beneath a pile of rusted-out John Deere tractors, his flesh long since eaten by rats. Transitioning the cats had been a mistake. I hadn't known the bastardized nanos could pass from human to another species, but it had gone better once we figured out that Tufts had become mine, and a queen. The cats didn't seem to get sick. They just got better, smarter, faster, and had the ability to communicate, mind to mind. I brought spoons to the table and sat. We ate, and the fish stew was delicious. So, while we wait on Matt to clean out the puffers, I said, tell me why you're here. Jaeger frowned. You said there was a tracking sensor? On a cutter, Jaeger said, sounding uncertain. That's a biker riding leather. A vest. He nodded, the motion jerky. His color was higher than before we ate, his temperature beginning to rise. My boss got in a pile of miscellaneous stuff not long ago. I got up and brought the box of junk to the table, placed it beside Jaeger. We can dicker, info, updates, and a little cash in return for your sensor, if it's in here. Jaeger frowned again, but he went on eating. Several bites later, he said, good fish stew, considering we're in the wilds of nowhere desert. What info do you want? He hadn't even looked into the box. I said, you can tell me what happened to Darson and his friend Buck Harlan. Darson, the man who had been beating his girlfriend and her daughter, who was now me, Buck Harlan, the man whose body I left burning in the Tesla. Building upon things we had talked about and things I still needed to know. Replacing memories. Binding him to me through a shared chemical hybrid nanobot signature. Building my nest, just like the cats did. Just like the bicolors did. As we ate, Jaeger told me about the Battle of Seattle and the deaths of Darsen, his girlfriend, and her daughter. I corrected his memory and said I, Heather, had gotten away. I made up a few details, enough for his own mind to build upon, unless he looked at it all too closely. We had seconds of the fish stew, finishing all but a half cup. I wouldn't be making fish stew again in many months unless I sold some valuable scrap, especially since this problem with Harlan meant I hadn't gotten my black market goods. My eyes felt raw at the thought of Harlan. Dead. Protecting me. What did asshole know about Harlan's death? My voice rough, I asked. And Buck Harlan? He went missing 2 weeks past. Jaeger lounged back and stretched out his long legs on the bench, crossing his bootless feet, wearing pop socks. It was strange to see a man in my father's clothes. Jeans, double layers of t-shirts bulging with weapons and a harness. Those socks. Striped bright green, dark blue, and silver. Seattle Seahawks colors. Pops and little mama and I used to go to the games. I hadn't seen a live football game in years. Pops used to keep a can of Skol in his back pocket, apple blend or vanilla. I could almost smell the flavored tobacco. He used to sing to Aretha's music. He had a terrible voice. Grief welled in me so fast the tears pooled in my eyes. I turned aside and blinked them away. All sorts of things were simmering to the surface and making me feel weird. Without cleaning my hands, I gave Jaeger another beer, more of my sweat on the damp bottle. The man could really hold his alcohol. All that body mass meant it took a lot to get him drunk. He removed the top and took a long pull before setting it on the table, his hands smoothing the bottle around and around, his fingers brushing where I had touched it. Foolish, foolish man, that little voice whispered. Harlan was tracking down info about an influx of MS Angels back into Louisville. I went still. Mara Salvatrucha Angels. They had been the scourge of, well, of everything and everyone. MS-13 had merged with the Hell's Angels in a hostile takeover in 2030, creating a biker arm of the international criminal gang. The newly merged gang had swept through large swaths of territory, leaving a path of property destruction and dead bodies in its wake. An onslaught so violent that only the outlaws had been equipped to counter it. The biker clubs went to war in 2032. In what had ended up a nasty, decade-long internecine conflict led by a very young Pops and his predecessor. Pops had won, and the scattered remnants of the MS Angels had not ended up as his best buddies. And now Harlan was here, dead, at the hands of a traitor, probably working with the PRC, the enemies of the Gov, and of me. Had the MS Angels found Pops's famous little girl? A sense of foreboding grew, one I tried to keep off my face as I asked. OMW cleaned the Angels out in 2040, didn't they? Little known fact, the remnants of the MS Angels allied with the PRC late in the war. And after the war, when the Chinese departed, the Angels started to rebuild. They had Chinese tech and weapons caches. The post-war famine opened up territory. We heard rumors they were expanding again, this time without or in front of the People's Republic of China. but with their own brand of ferocity and violence. Harlan went to check them out. Bugger. I didn't know what to do now. If the MS Angels had taken down Harlan and sent his body to me, that meant they knew who I was, and at least some of what I had on site, the post-war military weapons caches for starters. And if the Angels had PRC tech, then might they also have sent the crawler? Bugger, damn. Panic pattered up and down my spine. On the screen, I watched as the junkyard cats tore into another puffer. My thoughts still turned inward, I asked slowly. Do you have a pic of Harlan? A recent one? Why? Jaeger asked, as he peeled a morphin off his wrist. The chameleon capabilities of the narrow wristband had matched his skin so perfectly, I hadn't even noticed it until he twisted it off, snapped it flat, and unfolded it. I hadn't seen a morphin in ages. I still used an old model handheld. No one had morphins except the military, the gov, and a few filthy rich citizens with the proper sat dishes. The morphin, like the bike Jaeger rode and all the tech on it, was an indication of the deep relationship between the military and the OMW. Holy freaking bugger. The MS Angels, the OMW, the military, and the gov all probably knew where I was. I was so screwed. Jaeger swiped through pics and handed me the morphin. It felt silky in my palm and instantly matched my much darker tanned skin. On the face of the morphin was a pic of Harlan and Jaeger, their bikes in the background. I pushed the morphin back and pulled my handheld. I found the stills of the Tesla and the body of the OMW in the back, then handed it to Jaeger. This came today, packaged and shipped inside a piece of scrap the owner bought. It's Harlan, isn't it? Harlan, who had been my go-between for the OMW, the black market network, and the real world. Harlan, who had been hunting for traitors. Jaeger flipped through the stills several times, his face giving nothing away. But he had already entered the transition. I could feel the way his heart rate sped and his adrenaline spiked. I recognized the tats as OMW, I said. When you showed up, I thought you might have sent him some kind of message to my boss. Then the crawler situation happened and you were in as much danger as I was, so I'm now assuming the reason you came had to be for something else. Maybe even the Kuta sensor you talked about. Jaeger transferred accusing, angry eyes to me. Any confusion or acceptance or transition uncertainty was gone in the adrenaline rush. He was back to himself for a moment. You let me into your inner sanctum, your shelter. It was an accusation, and also the dawn of the protective instincts created by the transition. A stranger who showed up on your doorstep the same day a dead man came calling. A dart hit the back wall a half centimeter from his head. Jaeger went for his weapon. Don't, Mateo said through the speakers. Jaeger went still, eyes burning with rage. I took back the handheld and tilted my head to the dart. I was never in danger. So you lured me in here. You were never in danger from me, Jaeger stated. But I'm in danger from Matt and the internal defensive systems. I let you in to keep you safe from the crawlers. But if you sent Harlan to me, dead and covered with bicolors, then yeah. And if I didn't, then I have a really bad feeling that the Angels are heading this way. Probably tonight. Jaeger might wonder why the MS Angels wanted to kill Heather, whatever her name was. My lies were in danger of falling apart. Scrambling, I said something that made sense. They must want some of the tech here, or the weapons. You have weapons? A few, I said. Some of the boss's scrap is military scrap. My mind zinged from one thought to another. If the angels had gotten their hands on a Chinese crawler and on Harlan, maybe they planted the bicolors on Harlan's body. Figured they'd swarm me, kill me, so they could take the junkyard and its goodies. Two birds with one Tesla. The angels were crazy enough. "Matt," I said, "update."
"Remote viewing aircraft has been aloft for hours, sending one to access road and one to reconnoiter the property. Vids to your main screen, also searching out lying cameras."
"Nothing," I said, as the RVAC cameras took up the entire left half of the big screen. The road in both directions was empty. "What about a remote attack? An RVAC of their own?" Jaeger said,
"If your weapons are important enough to warrant all the things you say they've done, then they'd want to see the whites of your eyes."
"Up close and personal," I said. "Yeah, okay. Still. Matt?"
"Status quo," he said.
"Wait. At the extreme edge of the sensor range. I'm picking up something."
I nodded, my eyes on the screens. "You can relax, Jaeger," I said, pushing a little through my nanobots that were entering his bloodstream and nervous system. When nothing happened, I pushed harder. Jaeger shook his head, blinking. He lifted the brown glass bottle as if trying to see inside.
"I'm feeling weird. I shouldn't be feeling this way."
He tried to stand and didn't make it.
"What you do to me?"
He thought I'd poisoned him. Instead, his temperature was going up and the transition nanos were reaching a critical mass. Mateo said,
"I confirm activity at 15 clicks, and the buffers are suddenly all converging on the office."
Jaeger cursed and nearly dropped the bottle.
"What a fu—"
His hands clenched hard, his eyes fluttered closed, and he slumped over the table. I leaped to my feet, kicked off my house shoes, and punched open the armor bay that Mateo had moved out of the Sunstar and installed in the office. The narrow niche unlocked with a soft, sucking whoosh, and I stepped onto the mounting pedestal, my feet perfectly centered in the outline. Turning my back to the armor suit, I sucked in a deep breath as Gomez took over the armor AI and began counting down. I closed my mouth and eyes and held utterly motionless, hands down and out to my sides, fingers spread.
"Initiating female auto-donning," Gomez said.
The armor positioning arm went around my waist, pulling me against the torso segment. My head rocked forward and back. The armor sections began snapping over my body, interlocking, repositioning against muscles and joints, expanding and contracting to fit me perfectly. Across my middle, down my legs, down my arms. I suppressed the desire to fight it as the helmet and the face piece locked over me. Claustrophobia, memories from my own piece of hell stabbed into me like knives. I forced myself to hold, hold. Hold. Utterly still. The breathing tube slid between my lips and against my cheek and blew stale air into my mouth. I blew out that first puff with a relieved breath, inhaled slowly on the second. Again. Again. I opened my eyes, looking out into the office through the suit's visual screen and sensors, seeing what the office really was, what it could really do. Pop's last gift to me, when he was dying and had figured out that I needed to leave the OMW. The glove sectionals encased my fingers. The armored boots snapped shut.
"Prepare for peripheral nerve engagement, left hand," Gomez said.
I swore as minuscule needles, finer than acupuncture needles, pierced into my palms.
"Prepare for peripheral nerve engagement, right hand."
It too engaged. "Son of a bitch," I said, adding a few comments about the engagement process. Gomez didn't seem to care what I thought about his parentage or his sex life. Probably a good thing that the AI wasn't sentient. Do you wish catheter and bowel removal collection to be initiated at this time? No, God, no. I'd made the mistake of saying yes the first time I'd tried this. Never again. I'd hold it till I busted first. I was breathing. I was alive. I was protected in the lightweight, space-worthy armor worn by U.S. military and space-going vessels. My heart rate began to slow. Liquid oxygen breathing supply required? Gomez asked. No. Current Earth atmosphere desert conditions, West Virginia. Limited oxygen available according to the current specified atmospheric parameters, Gomez stated. As measured by outside sensors, CO2 percentages are abnormally high in current atmosphere. Atmospheric dust filters active. Acceptable, I said. Armor donning complete. The waist arm clicked back. I stepped down to the floor to see Jaeger staring at me, wide awake, with a gun pointing at my middle.
Well, aren't you just full of surprises? He said calmly.
Put down the weapon, I said. Do not pick it up again. Jaeger put the fancy gun down, cursed. Wide-eyed, he stared at the weapon right there, but not available to him. He did not pick it up again. Go to sleep, I commanded. Jaeger slumped again. Mateo?
We're dead without power. I'm moving out front, taking control of manual defenses. You'll have to get into the ship and reroute power.
Mateo meant for me to go into the crashed and damaged spaceship that had leaked hazardous particles for years and transfer power from it to our batteries before our next unexpected visitors arrived. It was dangerous, as I remembered from my one tour through the ship. My armor was flimsy compared to the warbot, which had built-in weapons and shielding, so, yeah, he was better equipped to defend us if it came to that. And with the office out of power to run the weapons we had retrofitted, my defenses were useless to me anyway.
Kate will walk you through the procedures, he said.
Right. Kate was the spaceship's AI, Central Artificial Intelligence Technology. I wouldn't be doing this alone. I raced out the back and stumbled over the ladder. Notch, sitting on the top step, his face turned to the window, looked over his shoulder at me. I let the inner airlock close, sealing us in together, standing, frozen.
Mouse.
It sounded like a statement, a two-part statement. I didn't know his meaning, but it felt like invaders, dangerous. Yeah, and more on the way, I said to him. Mateo, we got a screen in here? If so, show Notch the attackers approaching.
You and those damn cats.
A tiny screen over the exit door brightened, flashed, darkened, and resolved into the vision of the road out front. Invaders, I said to Notch, knowing he understood a very little English, mostly stuff about food. If they get onto the property, there will be no goat milk, no water. Sss, he said, this one angry. If the puffers continue to replicate, there will be no more protein or kibble, and they will eat your young. His mouth opened to show his canines, which were bigger than a normal house cat's. Sss, very defiantly pissed. Notch eased down the steps to the floor and walked to the outer airlock. Looked back over his shoulder and again at the door. Timmy fell in the well, I muttered, quoting a 2040 film about a modified cyborg collie dog that could actually speak English. I opened the outer airlock, much slower than his previous speed and looking a little clumsy in the bandages he hadn't tried to chew off. Notch stepped out into the night. Limping, he disappeared into shadows. I closed the airlock and said, Mateo, engage security protocols.
engaging. Get to the ship. Looks like our visitors have heavy armament.
I switched my face shield to auto and raced through the dark aisles, past tons of older, rusted skids of scrap ready to be bulk shipped. Pre-war heavy equipment scrap from the top-down mining that had removed entire mountain ranges to provide granite cabinet tops for homeowners and coal for the power industry. Farm tractors from when this area had been fertile land instead of flat granite. Alloy car bodies that no one would ever buy, not in this day of lighter hemp-based materials. The scrap back here was all old stuff that had been here when I got here, and would be here forever. The perfect disguise for what we really were. In my face shield, a cat form showed bright golden red with body heat, dropped 6 meters in front of me and sat. I skidded to a halt. Tufts, what the? Ahead, on the adjoining aisle I needed to take, cats attacked a puffer, ripping it to shreds. Oh, is anyone hurt? Tufts didn't reply, not that I could have understood her if she tried. Mateo's warbot body moved down the aisle on his modified 3 legs and scooped the busted puffer into a bucket.
No more for now, he said to the cat. The grabber will be busy. Just keep track of them. Don't kill them.
Tufts moved to the side. I raced down, now seeing cats leaping from aisle to aisle and pile to pile following me. Or leading me. Right to the ghillie-tech cloth that covered the side access hatch of the United States spaceship Sunstar. Beyond the tarp Mateo had rigged over the entrance, the ship's exterior was still functional. Stars shone on the undamaged part, reflecting sky and desert and visions of the junkyard in the automated, actively repositioning armor and chameleon skin. It was effectively invisible, unless someone stumbled on top of it or knew it was here and was looking for it. The ship had gone down in the middle of the war, in a major Earth orbit battle. It had broken up and the front half landed here. For some reason, it had never been found, even after the war ended. My burger chip must have sensed my uncertainty because it chose that moment to chime in. The timeline leading up to World War III was chaos. The tension created by stable WIMP engine technology, which led to active solar system colonization, was made worse with the appearance of bug aliens in 2036 when a scout ship with some functioning technology crashed into the North Sea. The ship was captured by the EU, and much of the alien tech was reverse-engineered and shared with the United States and other allies. This new tech was later stolen by other countries, notably the People's Republic of China, which refined and improved the Allies' designs. The subsequent claiming and colonization of Mars resulted in a war that began in 2043 and ended when the bugs appeared in large numbers and forced the peace treaty of 2045. Bugs divided Earth into major parties and some sub- Shut up, I told the burger chip. A lot of Earth-based human tech had been lost in the war. The Sunstar had space-going war tech, and some of it was lost as well. Except for what ended up right here. The office had even more dangerous tech. All of it was banned. The power sources and weapons, if used, could be identified from satellites, so powering the main WIMP engines would be dangerous. It might draw attention to the junkyard. Instead, I would slowly power up a backup engine, and even more slowly transfer power from the Sunstar to my equipment, batteries, and pre-war weaponry that, I hoped, no one could trace. But first, I had to make the power transfer happen. Where did the crawler get in? I asked Mateo. A single screen opened in the center of my faceplate, showing me a dusty, brownish, squat warbot slowly crossing the border, the time-date marker a week ago. The original crawler had all sorts of devices protruding from its carapace. There would have been dozens more devices and weapons inside on foldouts, all of them capable of independent drive and lethal measures. It was 75 or so centimeters high, less than that side to side and back to front, roughly squarish but with rounded edges. It was still that size when it entered the spaceship. What emerged 3 days later were two babies, each more than half the original size. They had taken on mass from the spaceship. "It entered the exterior rear engine compartment," Mateo replied. "So far as I can tell, the crawler never made it to the bridge or to engineering. It spent all its time in the shielding bay, breaking up a spy drone."
"Copy." I input the code Mateo had set when we first accessed the ship. Mateo 4816 Alpha Tango Delta. I placed a palm over the Viber and my face against the scanner. The hatch opened with a measured whoosh, and I stepped inside. Four cats slipped in behind me, Notch's tail tip almost getting caught when the hatch closed with a sense of finality. He was moving great for a cat who had been nearly dead. The security lights began to glow as I opened the next hatch and entered the ship proper. The sensors showed green, a breathable atmosphere. Manually, I slid my faceplate aside. All the low water use air scrubber plants in the niche boxes on the walls had died years ago, as evidenced by the metallic stale scent of the air. In a jarring, unexpected southern accent, Sunstar's AI said, "Welcome home, girl. About time you came to visit again." The accent was odd, but not something I had time to worry about. I raced into the dimly lit ship, searching the glowing schematics on the walls for the engineering department, or what was left of it after the ship crash-landed. The floors, decks, weren't flat or horizontal, and some had holes down to other levels. The ceiling tiles had shattered upon impact and were all over the floors, and the walls were cracked. All of it had worsened over time, making traversing the ship physically demanding and precarious. Sprinting down the halls, or decks or passageways or whatever spacegoers called them, was a little like racing over the blasted bedrock of the desert. I banged my shin into a chunk of wall. "Bloody damn," I said.
"Watch your mouth," the ship's AI said over her speakers, which nearly brought me to a stop.
Into my earbud, Mateo said,
"Moving into position at front gate. Intruders approaching from the west. No human or mechanical aggressors noted from other directions. Barriers are up and functional, leading to a single defensive point. All tire shredders and tracked wheel disruptors are up and functional. Office weapons are auto-trained on front entrance. But all automatic armaments and defensive measures are slow to respond. We are seriously low on power, Shining."
I dropped into the engineer's seat, hating that I was safe back here and Mateo was out front, facing an unknown onslaught alone. An attack with tech and hardware that might be better than what we could use, assuming the Angels had PRC weapons, and still stay hidden from SAT surveillance. I could only hope the upgrades we had done on Mateo's suit and on the property were going to be enough. I strapped in, knowing that Kate's command center wouldn't respond unless all the I's were dotted and T's were crossed. Mateo said,
"Grab her in position. Power, Shining. I need power."
From his tone, his suit had injected him with enough roids and swamped him with enough synth pheromones to enrage a rhino. Powering up Sunstar's miniaturized backup WIMP anti-WIMP particle processor engine, I said, watching the readouts. Ionized neodymium is present in sufficient quantities to generate anti-gravity and power. Initiating warm-up on WIMP and transfer systems.
Copy. Make it fast. RVACs indicate it's not the law, not the gov. It's a private army.
No doubt?
None.
Starting power transfer to office batteries and direct power to your suit, I said. Over Mateo's comms, I heard the roar of approaching engines. It sounded like a battalion.
"Come on, come on, come on," I whispered to the particle processor.
In the cold void of space, WIMP engines provided gravity for personnel and anti-gravity for propulsion and weapons, and it happened fast. On Earth, powering on a WIMP engine that fast, even a miniaturized backup engine, created extreme temperatures and stressed the ship, and powering it on slow meant we were dead. I nudged the power system up faster than was safe, knowing that if a military satellite with the proper scanning systems was watching this part of the desert, they'd see the system come on and they would know what had happened to the remains of their spaceship. Also, the heat emissions would melt most of the junkyard if I left it on too long. The office battery supply showed 17%, 18%, 19%, climbing too slowly. Bloody hell, hurry up, I cursed.
I warned you about the language, the ship's AI said. Sides, I'm doing the best I can.
Shining, Mateo said softly. Too softly. They're turning in. I need that power now. Batteries showed 20%. Finally. Through my armored suit, I whispered to Mateo and to Gomez, the office AI. Fire primary defenses. Gomez's metallic voice said, firing. Mateo confirmed. The earth rumbled under my feet, up into my bones. My teeth shook. The office battery dropped to 13%, to 10, to 7. Primary weapons fire stopped. I nudged the transfer power system up higher and saw the office battery percentage rise to 15%. Too low, too slow. Damn, damn, bloody damn. I stuck a ship earbud into my other ear. I was now tied into Mateo, Gomez, and the ship's AI. Kate, Shining Smith in engineering command seat. I heard a strange popping sound over Mateo's comms and glanced at the direct power to his warbot suit. It looked off. Something was wrong. I commenced a suit system diagnostic while also searching for a way to tie directly into the office's security system screens. You're leaking air and fluid, I told Mateo. Your suit's power drain has increased to 12 above maximum drain. What happened? Mateo didn't answer. Tufts leaped to my chair and sat on the armrest. My thoughts exactly, I muttered to her. The ship AI said,
honey, would you like me to evaluate Mateo's suit diagnostics?
I frowned.
Honey?
Yes, Kate. Run suit diagnostics, Mateo. Respond. Mateo didn't. I spotted a new switch, or rather an old retrofitted switch, part of the ship's ongoing repairs and modifications, stuff Mateo did in his off time. It clicked when I flipped it, and the office screens blinked on, merging with the Sunstar's screens.
System override, the Sunstar's AI said. Input screens from off-ship are now merged on board, which is interesting in a strange kind of way. Warning. Off-ship systems do not correspond to my natural default parameters.
Deal with it, I told the AI.
Dealing is what I do best, darling. Attempting to harmonize non-complementary soft and hardware.
I touched the screens, shoving them around, searching for one that showed Mateo. I found it and stopped. Mateo was on the ground 80 meters from the entrance, surrounded by puffers.
Row, row.
Tufts batted the screen.
Row, 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 row.
A dozen cats rushed toward Mateo, attacking the puffers. More cats joined the fight. I looked at Tufts, meeting her eyes. Hers were the green of fresh leaves and rainforest moss, things I remembered from my youth. She stared at me as if seeing more than I could understand. How did you do that? She chuffed at me, a disgusted puff of sound. Okay, then. The ship AI said,
the warbot suit has been compromised, sweet thing, sealing off inner soup chambers. And by the way, you can call me Jolene.
Jolene? What happened to Kate?
She's boring. Jolene is feisty, don't you think? I don't really have an opinion. I swiveled back to the screens and searched for vid that showed me the junkyard's entrance, and found it. One manned spots mini tank and three joint light tactical vehicles from various branches of the military, all decommissioned and painted in black chitosan, were stopped out front. Someone's been stealing from Uncle Sam, I muttered. Or the military had stabbed the OMW in the back and allied with the MS Angels. That would suck. For now, the equipment was trapped in the spiked tire and track traps that Mateo had raised. From what I could tell, the human component of the assault team hadn't expected resistance. Several had left the